Welcome to episode 2. I want to continue the conversation about how you make bold decisions to say no. So last time we were talking about how one of our clients said no to $1 million. I want to continue that conversation with you guys.
Great.
What do you guys think?
First question out the door is how do you have the confidence to do that?
How
do you have the guts?
This is the Speak the Unspoken podcast, where we help mission-focused brands unlock their potential. Our goal is to break down barriers holding your organization back and help you make bold decisions in strategy, communication, marketing, and culture. Hosted by Jason Jensen with Pat Padley and J.M. Boyd, we hope you enjoy the show.
I just heard a quote where somebody said, "We don't have a choice because selling Jesus right now, door-to-door vacuum salesmen are looking at us and saying that we have the harder job." We live in a time where bold decision-making is essential. And I want to continue our conversation about how brand foundation, like going through that, an exercise or going through that can help ministries really make these choices that allow them to go further and faster with more intentionality. And today we're going to be talking about the hows in your organization as part of our brand foundation series. So first, let's give a definition of how. The one I like, I'm going to pull that up really quick. Okay, so the definition I like about of hows is, hows are the spiritual DNA of your organization, and they are the particular ways the Holy Spirit animates your mission. So hows are the spiritual DNA of your organization, and they're the particular ways the Holy Spirit animates your mission. So that's when we're talking about hows, where we're talking about something specific. And it's sort of mirrored in sort of the business world, where like, what are our values, or what are our core beliefs, or what are our core things? I think they're all in that kind of phase. And what we think is super helpful is to say, how do we integrate faith into that? And I think the powerful idea is continuing on from last episode, is we are we're trying to, as faith-filled brands, follow what God is doing and doubling down on that. So if we look at what are the particular things that have borne fruit in our organization over time, figuring out, like when we lived this value or this expression of the Holy Spirit, we were at our best. We found our sweet spot. And so all of that is part of figuring out brand foundation, but this is a further extension to why brand promise and your brand story.
If you haven't listened to the first episode, it'd probably be a good idea to go back and have a listen to that first to get, because we're going to throw around some of those words. Here's what's interesting to me that I haven't really put together before right now, is when we look at, if you're looking at how well a series of ads is doing, or if you're, throwing something out on social or different things, you're looking at the analytics for it, right? Essentially, what we're doing in the same way with defining your brand promise, your hows, your why, is you're trying to find the analytics of what the Spirit is doing. In the same way where if you're looking at ad posts that you do or different kinds of language you're trying out and testing, you're looking at seeing what connects.
How's your brand engagement being
exactly
successful?
Mm-hmm. You're literally
when we
almost
talk
doing
about
the same thing.
Cats, the internet goes crazy, you know?
Unfortunately.
So one of our core values is like cat posts.
You know? Everything has to be catvertising.
Just as a note, that's not one of our core values.
No, but I think it's like, hey, what do we do in our brand? Like, what have we done over the years where God has really opened up doors? How are we acting in those moments that bore a lot of fruit?
Yeah, so, I love the correlation. Like, if you're looking at all the posts you've ever done, you see what do people like the most, what has the most engagement. Mm-hmm. You're sort of doing that same thing. You're just doing on what is the Holy Spirit released in that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't your how, it's one of the ways that you fulfill your organization's why.
Right. It becomes part of the filter that makes sure that you're always aligned with your why.
Yeah, and I think it also rounds it out. So they create more unique expressions of a why. So you could have two organizations that have kind of a close why, but the way they form their culture is radically different, in the same way that you can have, say, two missionaries, and their personal approach to an evangelistic relationship with somebody are drastically different. And the best version of each of those people is for them to actually be themselves, mm-hmm. right? So one example is, like, you have this one guy who's like, you know, I never push people. Like, I ask them questions and I show them that I'm super laid back and all this kind of stuff. I think of your dad as, like, he's like, I only want somebody to, like, say that they're a fundraiser, right? Mm-hmm. I only want somebody to give if they're, like, totally passionate. I give a lot of room. And then I know this other guy and they sit on the same board, Kurt. And Kurt, he's the kind of guy that knows that he can challenge his friends to say, look, buddy, it's time for you to, like, put your money where your mouth is.
Right.
And those are such opposing styles that if one guy tried to do the other guy's thing, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And I think that is, like, in an organization, when you figure out how you guys should be operating, you're just naming and claiming, hey, my style is the let's do the ask style. And the other one's saying, look, I've just seen fruit where I don't ask. And it's all about integrity of an organization.
Yeah, it doesn't mean one way is right and the other way is wrong. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about an organization, it's very different than a person. Even though we use the example of, like, a person is a brand, you know, this is the person, and how they dress is a part of that. It makes up how people experience them. Like, you've brought this up a couple of times. I think you say it better than I do. Just it doesn't define them, but it helps you experience them in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. It's like the character traits of that person are more expressed in one person than another. And they're like, virtue is a whole range and character is a range. And it's not only about, like, rights and wrongs, but it's more like expression. I think it's important to say what hows are not, you know, mm-hmm. or what these value things are not. They are not table stakes. So what I mean by that is honesty, integrity, kindness, all those things.
Quality
right. service, or
like stuff you would excellence. See on like a 80s motivational poster.
Exactly.
With eagles and
success.
I think those are not them. Those should be, hey, if you don't have integrity or if you're not honest, you should not be in business, let alone be in some sort of ministry.
Right.
So
faith-filled, that one is a little edgy to me. It's like, you should be faith-filled if you're in faith-based ministry, right?
Yeah.
But I'd rather them describe how are they faithful.
And I think people get there and they say, oh, we have a particular meaning of what faithful means. Mm-hmm. But go to the extra level of, like, really defining that so that you know, like, this is what we mean by faithful, and mm-hmm. it's powerful.
Or this is how we want people to experience our
this
faith.
Is our expression of faith.
Which is true because, oh, let's take faith filled for a second. There's a pretty broad spectrum there, right? Okay, you can go all the way over here on the charismatic nature of how the Spirit moves, or you can go over here on the contemplative nature of how the Spirit moves. Mm-hmm. And those are two ways of operating within an organization, maybe a specific spirituality, but the Spirit is animated in two different ways.
Yeah, we can have both and,
yes.
you know, but which one are you? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're saying how's kind of flesh out more of this framework to give you that filter. The other one is, let me give you a story about how these work really well. So one of our clients, David and Kurt are on this board of, they're an organization out in Portland called Loom. And one of their things that they hold dear is called, they say, willingness to call the emperor naked. And I just love the expression of that. And it's such a powerful value for them because they're out in East Africa where you have these cultural norms is not to really challenge the past. And you kind of just you walk around issues. So where you can't question even the unhealthy status quo that might be in the church or the culture or things like that. And so they're looking to find leaders who are able to buck the culture that they're in a healthy way to say what we're doing is not working, you know, right. because they want to help part of their goal as an organization is to move people from dependence on financial aid coming from the West into being self-dependent. And you can't get there unless you foster a culture within. And the fruit that they've seen over the years is when they are willing to, and when their people are willing to, like these leaders that they're forming and developing, if they're willing to call the emperor naked, that makes a massive difference in their effectiveness.
So, and just to clarify, that's literally one of their hows, right?
Yeah.
So that applies to how they would hire someone within their team. Is this person willing to call themselves the emperor naked?
Call themselves naked. I am naked.
Yeah. That's probably
vulnerable.
A good how in a different way.
I don't even know what that means. Let's just move on.
Let's move on. If I can. Another aspect of that would be calling the emperor naked is in a project they would do. Like, can they in that project have the freedom to call out what doesn't work?
Yeah, if they're developing a strategy within a project and they're saying, oh, that looks really great, you know, all that kind of stuff. Are they willing to say, nope, this, like, we all doubt that this is going to do, and I'm going to be the one to say that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the question you asked at the top, which is, how do you have the confidence to say no around mm-hmm. those things? So that's one example of how a value or how would give you the confidence to say yes or no to a project or to a donor or to something that, you know, you would use these different hows or filters to do that with. Mm-hmm. What are some other ones? Because that's a great one, but I'd love to hear.
Yeah, or just more. To jump off that too, it's not all only about saying no, it's about the yeses that you're willing to die for, you know? So I think of, there's always clients who have to push for budgets or, you know, in any scenario, you're going to find people who aren't 100% on board. And when is it worth putting the effort to explain, to win, to put your neck on the line? Like, this is all about no's and yeses, but really knowing that we are pushing forward in this way, and here are the things that we're, yeah.
This is interesting. I had someone I was talking with the other day, and one of the questions they had is, how do I stop fighting with my team and with my budget guys and stuff like that every time I say, this is what we need in order to do this event right? Mm-hmm. And my instant response was, you need to have buy-in to how you operate.
Yeah.
What are the rules or the filter with which it states how you operate? Because if you buy into that as an entire team, including your budget team, they're saying, like, if part of how you operate is to be attractive at a certain level, because the audience requires that to, mm-hmm. in order to preach to them, in order to share the gospel with them, it's got to be at a certain right. standard. You know, she was fighting over the fact that every time she said, we have to spend this much in order to even start talking to these people. And it's a youth, young adult sort of audience. But every time it was a challenge.
Right. So they're saying, hey, we know that we have to look good because we're losing young people to scenarios where the culture is just outperforming us when it comes to being attractive.
Right.
As our interaction, and how do we say, okay, well, we're going to try and be more attractive with the best news that we've ever had. You know, this is kind of that quote from the beginning of the episode, is like, vacuum cleaner, door-to-door salesmen don't envy us.
Right.
So
our job's harder than theirs is right now.
Exactly. I also think your example brought up this idea of, if you don't have them down and agree to, it's hard to A, have your leadership team call each other on those, mm-hmm. because you might have some of these values live within you and whatever, but if they're not celebrated and if they're not sticky enough from an idea perspective, like call the emperor naked, then it just kind of lives within you and you never get to that level. The mm-hmm. other thing is, if you don't have them, how do you hire the mm-hmm. right people? Like, to use the Jim Collins good to great, how do you get the right people on the bus? Mm-hmm. So it has to happen, like, hey, do they respond to our why? Do they understand our purpose and all that kind of stuff? But then it's like, do they want to behave in a way like that's this? you know? And if they don't, then we know, oh, you know, thank goodness we both, no one wasted their time. We're discerning this together. And I think that that's a powerful.
And I just, it just also dawned on me that that's how you say no to something as well, right? Mm-hmm. So using that attractiveness, the certain level of attractiveness in your how, if you can't do it like that, don't do it until the point you can.
Yeah. And I think that some people have this like the superstar mentality where they're like, ah, you know, we're not going to call them on that. And I feel like when people put their hows down, they're willing to say, I'm willing to get healthy and for us all to call ourselves along these, the set of values that we have, even if that means we lose the superstar. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you can really tell if you've got it, you've got it in.
You know, you see this played out. Like it's, you know, when someone knows this because it's, they've put this like statement out there, they're all agreeing to it, they make it public, and now they've got to live up to it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like brands I love that I, you can feel that they have certain requirements that they live by.
Yeah, tell your Southwest story.
Oh, I don't get to fly Southwest as much as I'd like to, being up here in the Pacific Northwest. Please come to the Pacific Northwest, Southwest, if you're listening. But they have sort of two sets of values. They have their basic work values and they have what they call their Southwest Way values, which is two things. And they describe them out in more detail, but you can see the basics of them online. It's a warrior spirit, a servant's heart, and fun loving attitude. And everything they do has to accomplish either one or all of these things.
Can you say them again?
Sure. Warrior spirit.
Yeah.
Servant's heart, mm-hmm. and fun loving attitude.
Yeah. And I feel like all of those are sticky.
It's super sticky. You can remember them right away. Everyone in the organization can remember them. But now you think about the decisions that Southwest makes, right? Every airline in the world start putting in one or two more rows to get more people in seats to try to value it except Southwest. And how do they make that decision?
Yeah, even considering that they want to be the low-fare airline.
Exactly. One of their stated things is like they want to be... Their vision is to be the most loved, most flown, and most profitable airline. But they're actually more profitable than the airlines that put in more seats. Mm-hmm. How does that happen? It's because they lived by their values, right? They lived by their house. They made that choice.
Mm-hmm. And it comes down to, hey, we're not going to have a chicken, you know, extra chicken sandwich on the meal because that's preventing us from being low
right,
airfare.
Exactly.
But we will fight to be... you know, fun loving enough mm-hmm. so that our announcements are witty and right. all that kind of stuff.
Or let people bring their own fun loving nature into the announcement.
Exactly. Yeah.
Guys, I'm sitting over here and listening to the conversation. I haven't been talking much because I'm just kind of soaking it up in the freedom in the beauty that comes from an organization that truly lives out their operating values. And I'm looking at both of you and thinking about when Nicole and I moved up here and our discernment story and we have a lot of operating values and core beliefs here at Glass Canvas. And like Speaking the Unspoken is one of them. It's the name of the podcast. But there's a lot that we don't always share like publicly. And one of the ones, although it's on our website, is we believe in seeing the whole person. And I'm thinking of the moment where, so Nicole and I were on our, in the process of discerning to move up to Canada here in Vancouver and you know, start this new job. And we woke up, we were pregnant. We woke up and we found out that we had a miscarriage. And I remember texting both of you guys because I was supposed to have a phone call.
Yeah, tell us that day.
I was supposed to tell you, hey guys, I'm on board, you know? And I texted both of you, hey guys, here's what's going on. And I think within about 10 minutes of each other, you both called me.
And we didn't know that we had.
Yeah, I don't think you guys had communicated with one another, and you had just said, "Hey, don't make a decision right now. Don't even talk. I think JM, you'd said like we're not even going to talk to you for like another 2 weeks. Like, take care of your family." And mm-hmm. then Jason, you called me and you said, "Hey, like I'm really sorry that sucks." And you even shared a little bit of your personal experience and how do you help your wife in this time, and. Yeah, I'm sitting over here listening to what you guys are saying and maybe even get a little emotional over here, but just like the beauty and the freedom that comes from an organization that truly lives out their values fully through their, it's the DNA, like we use that word of DNA, like it's truly 100% baked in to the core of the organization, to the atom, to the actual cells of the organization. And yeah, I mean, I guess I'm sort of honoring you too for that. Yeah, but just but I think that's the kind of freedom of operating out of a place of clarity and alignment. I don't know, that's maybe more of a personal example, but that's how that actually comes to life. Beyond just like the marketing or communication lens from it, right?
I think the experience that you had on the other side is the power of God working through us, just being true to his call on us. I know this is, sounds a little self-serving, but I'll keep going. it's not my power that moved you in that moment, right? Or like...
Because I've worked at a lot of different agencies and a lot of great ones and had phenomenal core values and felt cared for as an employee and those kind of things.
But so, as people of faith, it's like we have the opportunity to have God flow through us. And I feel like when you discern that well and get a how, like, hey, we are going to be the kind of people who call the emperor naked because that builds the kingdom. You know, like that's on the like, hey, like having a real conversation with somebody and saying that. And then there's like your experience. And I feel like when people live their values super faithfully, it that's what changes the world, right? It almost doesn't matter what you do, or what you do will flow out of that, versus like, oh, we're kind of doing this thing and we're doing that thing. Like if those things are aligned and if we have clarity and alignment from why, through brand promise, through brand story, through through what, like, or through hows all the way to what we do, then I think that we see fruit. We see the fruit of the kingdom being built.
What's surprising to me is you can have what's without a how, right? Without hows. And you see it happen all the time. You know, you could use the airline example as well, where, you know, American Airlines version of this is we want to be, I don't know, something like we want to be the best airline in the world. What does that mean? There's no hows in that. There's no definition of that. So there's no way to say, how should we do that? Or you can practically do things. Like we, in ministry, you're going to do like Bible studies. You're going to do like small groups. Or you're going to do content. You're going to create content or whatever it is, or build a program. But they're just a program, or they're just a thing unless they embody your hows. And they are replaceable and interchangeable with everything else someone else is doing. Unless they embody your house.
Let me give another example on that one. So hospitality. Hospitality is a big value that a lot of people have in the ministry. You know, we want to make people feel comfortable. There's the, you know, belong, believe, become sort of model of a number of different evangelization models. But belong, hospitality... Belong, believe, behave. The hospitality by itself is a good value, but it's not deep enough. So I'm looking at St. Lawrence Center. I had a great call with Stacy, I think a number of weeks ago, and one of theirs, and it is, it's hospitality, but it's build a culture of home. So the St. Lawrence Center is the it's a Catholic center on the campus of the University of Kansas in Lawrence. And
Kansas University.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference, isn't there?
No, no. It's University of Kansas, but they call it KU.
Oh, weird.
So it is. But the concept of home miles away from your home when you're a college student, like there's a different lens there and there's a depth there. And she was even sharing with me that, you know, I think most of her meetings are sort of in the afternoon. And, it's this idea of just make people feel at home and the atmosphere of rest and relief. And there's an ownership of the space. And so she'll leave her office and, you know, be gone in meetings for the rest of the afternoon and then leave the center. And she'll come back the next morning and, you know, some papers are shuffled and maybe somebody leaves like a empty Coke can or whatever. And it's because there's so much of an ownership of the space and this home feeling that it's like, she doesn't mind if students come in and I got to cram for an exam the night before. I'm going to close the door and borrow her office for a minute. And it's just part of the culture. And it's a natural thing that's happened. And there's that ownership. Or another thing that I know that they do is, what's the first thing you do when someone comes into your home? Like you greet them.
Show them around.
And you show them around.
A weapon. defend myself.
not to defend yourself. But you show them around. So they're really big. And I actually experienced this when I was visiting them. Can I just give you a little tour of our space and just take that time out of your day to spend the time with that person to just make them welcome and comfortable. Mm-hmm. So that build a culture of home, there's a different depth in that mm-hmm. than there is if they just said, well, one of our core values is hospitality.
Let me add.
And they didn't have to be, say, hey, this is the procedure. When you notice right. somebody new, you have to do this. Mm. Like, not that being intentional about those kinds of things are bad, but when you were relating the story, it was more like that just has now been organically developed. So right. Stacy would give you a tour, but even a student who is now owning the space and feels like they're part of the St. Lawrence Center.
They're not
Center.
Even a volunteer. It's just like, they're just themselves.
Oh, hey, I noticed you're new here. Come here. Let me just show you around. Yeah.
That's what you do. Cause you're like, this is my space and I'm inviting you into the hospitality of like welcoming.
There's a reflection of the Father's love.
Right.
Is how I see it. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I think that's at the depth of what that core value or that how is.
Well, you guys are getting deep.
No, that's good.
Episode two, getting deep.
I also think that when you get all these hows like working together, oftentimes ministries feel like what they do is going in all these different directions. Like if you can imagine, you pull off on the side of the road and you get into like the country and like, you know, you may be on a hill and there's roads that just go in every direction. That's what a lot of ministry feels like, where it's like, oh, we can go here and here and here and here. And like every road takes us in a different direction. One goes north, one goes south, right. east, west. I think when you align all these things, your ministry starts feeling like you're moving on a highway together. And yeah, some of the parts in your ministry are the, you know, the fast lane, and some of them are the, you know, the cargo lane or what, you know, the right lane or, you know, but we're all moving forward, even though they're not all moving forward in the same direction, and they're all working together to push, to move a load down, you know, distance and as fast as we can. Some things go faster than others, of course.
Can I build on that for a second? Yeah. So this is like a conversation that happens all the time. In the last episode, we talked about how one of the difference between your why and the why of everyone within the church, right? Or within the greater body of the church to build mm-hmm. the kingdom. It's so easy just to see, hey, we're all building the kingdom of God. We're all built sharing the gospel. But what is your part of that?
Mm-hmm. What is your particular slice?
What's your particular part? Yeah, so if you're looking at it like a pyramid and it's like, what's the brick that you're laying, that you're putting down here to saying, this is what God's called us to. The problem with it is within ministry and within building that kingdom, there's so many pieces to fill. There's so many holes that aren't filled. And it's so easy to see another piece to fill that's really close to what we do and how we do it. And so we go, it's really close to what we do. Mm. So we go, oh, let's do that too. But unless you have hows to define whether you can do that in how you're doing what you're doing, and align it with why you're doing what you're doing,
yeah,
then it's not yours to do.
Yeah, unless, yeah, if you're called and anointed to something, or if you're not called and anointed to something, it's going to feel like walking through molasses, right. or, you know.
But we do it because we feel like, oh, it's hard to do, but, you know, it's part of building the kingdom. But it's really because it's not your part to build that, you know. You see a lot of this happen within ministries where they'll start something up and they just struggle to push to make it happen over and over and over again and change it and iterate on it. And it never really gets off the ground. Mm. Or it's just a good idea. And what, using that analogy of the road, what's happening there is you're literally taking a part of your engine power and you're taking an exit off the freeway. And that makes it a lot harder and takes you a lot longer to get your goal, to get to your goal at the end of the freeway.
Yeah. Knock out all the stop signs.
Yeah.
Lights.
So hows basically are like the GPS or map to help make sure that your whole organization is going down the road.
Yeah, the exercise of defining them
you
know, helps you.
And using them as a filter over and over and over again.
Yeah, they should be celebrated and you should... Everyone in your organization to be able to say, hey, these are our four. And I think as soon as you get to having like more than five.
We have six.
We have six, so we're breaking our own rule a little bit. But if my rule would be, if you can name all six, then you can keep them.
Yeah.
I feel like 5 to 7.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're getting, yeah. I mean, there has to be, back to the process, like when we're taking somebody through it, or like there should be a difficult conversation about mm-hmm. it. Yeah. There should be not an argument, but like a healthy conflict.
Oh, there should be definitely emotional mm-hmm. elevation of like, that is us and that's not us. And then mm-hmm. at the end of the process, people should feel that is us. Like, you know,
there's no lack of clarity. There's lack of buy-in.
Here's the thing is saying something you said, Jason, is like, if you can't recall it, like if we looked at our six, for instance, right now, if I couldn't recall every single one of them, it wouldn't just be me that needs to recall it. This is the reason something needs to be sticky, mm-hmm. because if the leadership can say it, that's great. That's fine. But everyone in your organization should be able to recall it. They don't have to get the word dead on,
right?
But they need to be able to recall the essence of it in a second. Mm-hmm. If they can't, then it's probably not one of your values. It's either table stakes or it's just something in the nature of the culture of your office, but it's not really part of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to like 5, 6, 7, it's really how much can everyone, how many can everyone relate to? Because mm-hmm. I do see that there could be 7. If you get 8, like let's just say you can't have 8.
That's the line. There we go. Yeah. That's it.
And 8's not really a holy number. And, you know, like, so, you know. But maybe if you have 12, then, but you'd have to remember them all. Anyways,
One will go away and then you'll vote a new one in and
Yeah. And the other thing is like, we should mention, I think whys should never change. You can have a development of understanding of it over time.
Clarify it.
Like you can clarify it and like get it. But I think it's just more of a refinement over time of understanding it. Hows, I think you can see where God has moved in a particular way and kind of maybe add one on, like if there's a season, like we just added the idea of called and anointed, making sure, because that was a good season for us. But what you do can change all the time, because mm-hmm. it should always serve your why. Like your what should be like, hey, and the example that I've heard and you guys might have heard is like in the train business. Mm-hmm. People are like, hey, we're in the train business. So at the advent of airplanes, those who were in the train business had a real hard time. But those who were in the people, transporting people business said, oh, this is the new technology. This is the new what that we can do to, that's part of that thing. And the clarity that happens there allows your organization to stay fresh in what it's doing. And I think we see this where it's like, hey, we've just always done it this way. And if we could say, no, why we do this has always stayed the same, but what we do should constantly be adapting so that we can be more effectively living out our slice.
This is exactly what happens within ministry. Sort of the same idea is we oftentimes in ministry, I'll hear from them and they say something along the lines of, well, we're out of date. We're out of touch. We're doing these things, and it's because they've been focusing so much on what they do mm-hmm. instead of why they're doing it, because they've lost touch with their part of why and it just adopted the whole building the kingdom why.
Yeah.
If you don't go back to and go, what is our why? Mm-hmm. How do we live that out?
Yeah.
Then you can't just adjust your what's. You can't just go, well, we should do these other things. So it's super easy to just start with the medium. Oh, we need a website, or oh, we should be on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is actually not a win.
Right.
Unless you first understand, okay, why do we exist in the first place?
Yeah.
How does that affect what we do?
Yeah. Okay. Big takeaways for this episode.
I don't know. The one for me was like the dawning moment that what we're doing when we're helping someone define a why and hows is actually the same as looking at analytics in some ways. Mm-hmm. We're just looking at the Spirit's impact instead of the engagement from people.
Yeah, I think it's the people that that we talk to and the people who are doing these amazing ministry, even that we don't know. And like, I feel like when they discern well how to see what God has done with them and where God has moved through them, the exercise and the effort that goes into that is all worthwhile. That's my major, if you just take one thing out of this, is following hard after God, this is one way where you could do that well. Hey everyone, thanks for listening. If you like the show, you can subscribe and learn more on our website, glasscanvas.io. We're so grateful that you could join us. To everyone out there working hard to build the kingdom, keep doing work that matters.
This show is produced by Gareth Alexander with music by Jonathan Velasquez. Curious about any examples or resources discussed in the show? Check out the show notes for more info.